If you're paying more than $1 a month for any ED or hair medication, listen up. At Joy & Blokes, when you start TRT or in Clomiphene, you can add any ED or hair loss prescription for just $1 a month. $1 add-ons with your hormone plan, and right now, all labs are 50% off. I'm Josh Whalen, founder of Joy & Blokes. I built this company because men are tired of paying for fragmented care without results. Every Joy & Blokes lab includes a visit with a licensed clinician who connects your symptoms to your biomarkers. You'll get a real plan that covers hormones, performance, and confidence. If you're considering TRT or in Clomiphene, this is the most efficient way to do it. Get started at joyandblokes.com and use the promo code PODCAST. New customers get 50% off their labs, and for a limited time, you can take advantage of our $1 ED or hair loss add-ons when you start TRT or in Clomiphene. Not available in all states. Compounded medications are not FDA approved. Learn more at joyandblokes.com. Brother, I'm going on a wild Hulk Hogan. If I like get some moment, I'll make sure it's an explosion. Cause lately I've been seeing stars, trying to kick out on this joke course. But it's no hope.
What is good, everybody? Thank you for tuning in to a special edition of the Slap and Meat Wrestling Podcast. It's been a crazy week here. So just from the jump, we are live on YouTube. From the jump, I am going to not necessarily pay attention to the chat. We'll mention a few things if something pops up. But I'm going to run this as if this is a normal show, as I'm normally recording, if this was a typical like Friday episode, right? I wanted to do this a little bit live, so that those who, haven't, you know, those who are, you know, listeners of the show who waited and have essentially missed two episodes this week. So Tuesday, let's just sort of clear the air here. Tuesday, Wavy D wasn't supposed to be on it. And then Monday he texted me and said he would be, which made me excited because that allowed me to have that sort of allowed me to have a little bit more time for discussion. And, you know, I'm so used to doing that, the Tuesday show with him, that, you know, the first week without him where I did it was a little bit, it was like 30-minute episode, right? And so I was excited. Okay, we can get back into the swing of things. And then when I sent him the rundown, he was like, oh, man, the schedule changed, which isn't a problem. I understand 100%. We just went back to what was originally planned. And then I just decided, you know, I don't have enough for a Friday episode this week and a Tuesday episode. And so we decided, you know, we're going to hold off. We're going to do everything on Friday. And that was like Tuesday during the day, Tuesday evening passed, didn't do the show with the whole plan of doing a show on Friday. I woke up Wednesday morning and found out that my grandmother has passed away. And so I've been dealing with that with my family the last couple days, just sort of, you know, being there for my dad and his sister and all of that. And so Friday I wasn't able to record because, you know, I was dealing with family stuff, right? But I still want to give you guys, I really want to cover this because, as the title suggests, this is a casual viewing, a casual perspective of All In. And we'll close the show with that. But now that I sort of caught us up as to why this episode's happening on a Saturday and why it's live on YouTube. If you're watching live, thank you for joining. If not, I completely understand. If you're watching after the fact, thanks again for tuning in. I do appreciate that. If you're watching on YouTube, like, share, subscribe, share it with your friends, pass this around. That way we can get this thing going. While we are on housekeeping, let's go ahead and do what we normally do. Link in the description. First link in the description takes you to the WWE shop, where you can get shirts like this Free Otis shirt or the new Damage Control. There's a whole bunch of new shirts every single week. I think American Made has a new shirt. Go get you some new merchandise. And through the link in the description, that helps us here at the Slap and Meat Wrestling Podcast. You know, that we get a small percentage back from your order. And then finally, join the Discord. There's a link in the description, or if you wait to the end of the stream, in the outro, there will be a QR code that you can pause on, screenshot, take a picture of. It'll link you straight to the Discord and join. That's where the discussion happens in throughout the week. So let's get to business. We got a lot to cover in this episode. Before we get to All In, I want to cover some WWE stuff. And then I want to, of course, get to the main topic, which is a casual viewing of AEW All In. So with that, right before we get into that, one more time, if you're watching this live, send this to your AEW friends. Send this to whoever you think would enjoy watching this. I know Collision is about to come on or is on now. So send this to them. Let's see if we can get more viewers than Collision has on a weekly basis. Now, but if you're listening to this on audio afterwards, if you're listening to this, you know, on audio afterwards, follow, leave a review, let us know what you think of the show. That's wonderful. But let's get into the first topic. And the first topic, so typically how I would do the Friday show typically how I would do the Tuesday show would be, all right, let's cover last week's SmackDown, and then this week's Monday Night Raw, right? And then, because I didn't do that this Tuesday, I want to catch us up. But we also have this week's SmackDown that happened. I'm beyond what you did not watch. Do not plan to watch. Everything I've read said that there's really no reason to watch. I have one thing written down for SmackDown, and it's all encompassing over the last 2 weeks of SmackDown. And this also answers the question I saw that B-Master asked in the Discord, because, you know, I do like to ask for topic suggestions and stuff like that. And he asked the question of, like, do you like the idea of them turning Kevin Owens heel? And to answer that particular question, no. I have three people. So the topic that I want to talk about is SmackDown needs heels. To answer his particular question, I don't think Owens needs to be heel. Owens is that Stone Cold-esque character to me. And I know there's a lot of people who don't believe that there are tweeners, but Owens is the definition of a tweener. He's a dude who can sort of ride the line and be whatever you need him to be in a particular situation. I like Owens being a prize fighter. I think Owens being a prize fighter makes sense. I think if you took Kevin Owens and just said, I'm going to do whatever is best for me, whether if that's partnering with Cody and being a face to knock down the bloodline, or if it's going against Cody to win an opportunity at the title, I think that's what Kevin Owens should be. I think there's few people in this industry, you know, Dean Ambrose, John Moxley, when he was here, Dean Ambrose was a tweener. Kevin Owens is a tweener, right? I think Kevin Owens should not be a full-blown heel. Kevin Owens as a prize fighter. So that's the answer to B-Master's question that he asked. Do I like Kevin Owens being a heel? I think in this circumstance, I think it would work. But Kevin Owens truly is a tweener. And I know there's a lot of people in the casual audience who don't like the idea of tweener, that you have to be either a face or either a heel. I don't necessarily agree with that assessment. I think there is a need in wrestling for more nuanced characters. I think the superhero-esque characters worked in the 80s when everything was sort of bigger than life, larger than life, not based on reality, right? But now that we've started to sprinkle in a reality-based booking, and that sort of entered into to what the industry is, I think if we're going to remain that way, human beings react differently than what our superheroes react to, right? Like Superman reacts to certain things because he's Superman, but there are no true Supermans in real life, right? People react to different stimulus or stimuli depending on what, you know, whatever their motivation is. And so I personally believe, instead of saying, well, I'm going to be a face, therefore I can only face heels, I'm going to be the good guy, therefore I can only face bad guys, I think we need to have motivation-based characters where, you know, I'm Kevin Owens, I want to face Cody. So Cody wants to give Owens the belt for what? Because Owens deserves it, because Owens has earned it. And Owens should be, I'm a prize fighter, I'm getting an opportunity at the title, right? And so SmackDown does need heels. That's SmackDown's biggest problem right now. And in terms of the overarching theme of SmackDown, is it needs heels. When you lost heel Roman Reigns, you lost, you know, you did lose the bad guy, right? And you do need bad guys on your show, don't get me wrong, but I have three proponents of who they can turn heel, and I think all three of them are going to have the same excuse from an audience standpoint of, well, you can't turn them heel. And those three people are Cody Rhodes, Bianca Belair, and Montez Ford. And the response from a majority of the fan base, especially the casual audience, is going to be, well, you can't turn them heel because they're the face of the company. And my response to that is, can we not differentiate? We know kayfabe is dead, right? You know, we know that there is no sort of like fourth wall in wrestling anymore. Like, we understand, most fans of the product understand that what the person that's on character is separate from the person that's behind the camera when the camera's not rolling. And we understand that in any form of entertainment, we understand that Robert Downey Jr. is not Iron Man when the camera's running, and he's not going to be Dr. Doom now when the camera's off, right? He's Dr. Doom when the camera's on and he's recording the new movie, but when the mask is off, the camera's off, and he's just Robert Downey Jr., he could be the face of Marvel still, right? And so Cody Rhodes makes a perfect heel while still being the face of the company, and it's real easy what you can do with Cody Rhodes. It's real easy what you could do with him. With Cody Rhodes, all you have to do is, okay, what was the whole point of him winning the title? He wanted to finish the story, right? And that was supposed to give him ultimate satisfaction, gratification in himself, right? But he has it, and it's not enough, right? He has the title. He finished the story. The crowd still cheers for him. But when you look at the merch sales, when you look at who's still the number one guy, it's Roman Reigns. It's the Bloodline. It's LA Knight. He's not the guy that people are cheering for through and through, right? Roman immediately comes back and he steals the spotlight off of Cody. And then not only that, is he gets the belt and he doesn't realize the pressure of being champion, that everyone's going to be after him. And he starts to crack. He starts to go into some sort of like psychotic break. And Cody Rhodes slowly over time starts to, you know, isolate himself from Owens and from like Randy Orton and the guys that sort of he put around him. And maybe he starts to recruit some other guys like Ricky Starks when he shows up or someone like that, that he can sort of use as his protection to keep the title because now he's paranoid. And there's a nuance between who he is on screen versus and when the cameras are off and he's doing the interviews, he's doing what Dwayne Johnson does. When Dwayne Johnson's talking to Good Morning America, he's Dwayne Johnson. But when he was on camera, he was Final Boss, The Rock. Two separate people. And I think that that could happen. I think you can do that. I think you could differentiate between the two. And Beemaster just asked, you know, wouldn't that be confusing to the kids? A little bit. But I think there's a way you could tell it to where either A. So this is going to make me sound like a dick. I don't personally care about the kids. I know that that's a segment, but I've always believed that the best children's story should be written for adults. It should be written in a way that a kid could understand it, but it should be written for adults. And let's just also be honest, the wrestling fan base, and I know there's kids in it, but the wrestling fan base, for the most part, is 18 to 60 years old. You have some that are young and they're getting into it. But for the most part, the wrestling fan base that are buying your merchandise, that are watching the shows on a week-to-week basis, that really, in this case, matter, 18 to 60 years old. And so that I believe you should be telling your story for the 18 to 25, maybe as the 18 to 35 age bracket. The kids are important, absolutely. That's where you have the John Cena character for. Not every character needs to be for the kids. And I think if you have Cody Rhodes run that line of like psychotic break where he starts to spaz on Owens and Randy, there's a nuance to who he is. And he's battling with these like moral dilemmas where, cause let's just be honest. He's the American nightmare, right? Nightmares aren't good things. Right, it makes more sense if he's if he's, you know, this guy doing shady thing. Also, good people do bad things for good reasons, right? And so I think there's a nuance into right. If I asked you what makes a heel, you would there are things that you would say. You know, he would cheat or he would, you know Logan Paul use brass knuckles type thing, right? Well, good people can do that if they're trying to do things that they feel are good things. So a good person maybe trying to provide for his family goes into the corner store and robs the place because he's trying to take care of his kid or whatever, right? Good people, when pressed and desperate situations, good people do bad things for good reasons. And I think Cody Rhodes could do something like that. The second is Bianca Belair. She's 1,000 times better as a heel. I know everyone wants Jade to be the one that turns. Jade's not ready to be a heel. Jade needs to be the superhero, Super Cena type character. Having Bianca turn as the jealous person who's, well, you stole my spotlight. If it wasn't for you, I would, you know, and me sort of trying to go after the women's tag division with you, Jade, I would be women's champion or, you know, I would be Miss Money in the Bank. But instead, I had the focus on helping you, and you cost me my career, right? And Bianca needs to turn. I know she sells merchandise for the kids. Bianca needs to turn. It has to happen. Instantly, you get a very good heel there. Tiffany's good in the women's division. The women's division's not necessarily struggling for heels. The third one, Montez Ford. Montez Ford's being held down by Dawkins. Dawkins is good by himself. I really feel it. Dawkins is at a place right now where I think he can have a singles run, maintain a mid-card singles persona, and let Montez Ford go run for that main card. Montez Ford needs it. He's not getting any younger. I think he's like 35. So at best in his prime, he has 5-6 more years, Montez Ford needs to go ahead and turn heel. Have him and Bianca be that sort of evil power couple. Not necessarily evil, but, you know, the Triple H, Stephanie McMahon, like, authority power couple. And I know Triple H can't wrestle, but I would love for, like, him to have a authority figure position on the, where he's, like, recruiting a bunch of his favorites in, like, a big faction. And it's, like, Bianca and Ford and some other, like, Carmelo Hayes. And he's recruiting them to sort of, like, put them in position, that sort of elevates them because of who Triple H is, right? And that, I think that would be fun. And I know there's the whole thing with, like, well, they got the Hulu show and all of that. And that's fine, because, again, there's a difference between who Montez Ford, the character on WWE, is, and who Montez Ford, the guy when the camera's off, who just so happens to have a show about his life, right? I think it's okay. If we're going to go with the idea that kayfabe's dead, it's okay to say, hey, that's a character, no different than, and this is where I go back to, well, wouldn't that be confusing to the kids? Well, is not the same guy who played Iron Man is also going to play Dr. Doom? Is that not confusing to kids? Right. And so that's my rebuttal to that. Right. And so SmackDown needs heels. I think you got three that are ready to be heels right now. Now, obviously, there's, you know, bring up Ethan Page. I don't know if he necessarily needs to be caught up right now. I know that's what a lot of people are saying, is, well, Ethan Page is ready. I don't think so. I also don't know if he would want to go up to the main roster, because Ethan Page is not necessarily top of the card Friday night SmackDown ready yet. I also just sort of selfishly want Ethan Page to stay in NXT, because with the TNA partnership, I want him and Josh Alexander to tag one more time. Just one title run of the North in NXT, and then you could take Ethan Page from me, right? But some others you could throw in here. Carmelo Hayes was booked as the perfect heel in NXT. The way Shawn Michaels used Carmelo Hayes was 100% perfect. And then he gets caught up, drafted to SmackDown, and Triple H just sort of doesn't use him, right? And so, Carmelo's ready. I think Bianca can turn. Montez turning. And Cody's the one that I really think you could have a lot of fun with Cody sort of being the sort of guy who sort of battles with his inner demons that eventually leads to him becoming full-fledged heel as the actual American Nightmare. Again, nightmares aren't good things. You don't wish a nightmare on a kid. Nightmares are bad things. So why is the American Nightmare a good guy? Right now, ultimately, I don't see Triple H doing these things, but those would be the three or four that I would rise to the heel, and I think that fixes your heel issue that you have on SmackDown instantly. I think it fixes it instantly. So let's move to this past Monday, Monday Night Raw. So the first thing I want to talk about, we're gonna go ahead and get them out of the way. The Wyatts don't piss me off again. Now, let's back this train up a little bit. Train's still in the station. Y'all welcome to hop on. I told y'all back in June this was going to be straight up ass. Go check those episodes out. I talked about it for about 3-4 weeks that the Wyatt 6 was going to be ass. And every single week I'm more justified in it, right? They don't piss me off this week, though. Here's why. You had an opportunity for Maxine and Ivy Nile to put on a match where no interference happened, where they can settle their differences. You could, from a non-kayfabe perspective, you could show that Maxine's gotten better in the ring. You could show that Ivy Nile's really good in the ring, and you don't need any outside interference to mess it up. And that's exactly what you do, is you put in in-ring interference that messes it up. And this entire Alpha Academy has been screwed because of this story. Now, when I started critiquing the Wyatt Six, what did I initially say that was going to happen with why I was so upset with them choosing Chad Gable? My initial reaction to that was, well, this is ultimately going to hurt Otis. This is ultimately going to hurt the guy on my t-shirt right now. Why? In June, well, leading into June, at the end of May, at the end of Saudi, at the end of King of the Ring, right? And we were going into Money in the Bank, and we're really getting Chad Gable, and we're getting ready for this turn from Otis onto Chad Gable. And there was really a point in time where we thought Chad Gable was going to be IC champion, and the match was going to be Chad Gable versus Otis, where the turn happens, and we get this big match, and Otis wins at SummerSlam to the applause of the entire crowd. And all of that crumbles on June 17th, 2024, Corpus Christi, Texas, when the Wyatt Six debut and Merc Chad Gable, and then the turn was essentially, well, the turn happens, and with Otis and them, Gable gets murked, and then essentially what happens is Gable's just sort of left by himself, and it sort of just seemed rushed, not planned, not really thought out long term, and you sort of just crush all the momentum again of Otis. Where remember Money in the Bank when he won it, and he had all this momentum with the Mandy Rose story, and then that sort of gets crushed. Again, now you're crushing Otis. Again, you're also hurting Chad Gable. He's not benefiting out of this. You're hurting the Creeds. Maxine's not benefiting. Tozawa's not benefiting. Ivy Nile's not benefiting. Really, no one's benefiting from this whole story. And this is exactly what I said was going to happen. This is not a diss on Bray Wyatt at all. This is RIP to Bray. It's been exactly 1 year as we're recording this. No diss to Bray at all. No diss to Taylor at all. But let's just be objective here. This is a passion project. That's exactly what this is. And until we recognize that, the longer we put the Wyatt Six on here, and all they do is sort of, like, there's no justification given to us for why they attacked Chad Gable and why they murked half the security backstage and why there was no punishment. There's no payoff yet. And I know we're getting some matches, but they're not necessarily all that good. It's not necessarily believable when they're in the ring because they take a shit ton of offense against the Wyatt Six. You know, that tag match, they were getting beat up pretty bad by American Made, which doesn't make me actually care about a team that the first week they debut, they kill half the security team. And then now they're in the ring and they don't have the mask on and they don't apparently have their superpowers. And now they're getting completely destroyed. Right. So the Wyatt's done pissed me off because this was a perfect opportunity for me to see what Maxine could do in a match. And she was really doing really very well, far improved from her last match. And then you ruin it with the Wyatt Six bullshit. And now you sort of just give me a bunch of nothing. Again, just like you always do, and you're benefiting nobody, and it's hurting everyone. Everyone involved in this, just like I said, if you're not being benefited, you're being hurt, right? The next thing, we're going to move into the women's tag division. This is just from both shows. I don't know what the fuck they're doing with this thing. Apparently now they got a match on Bash at Berlin. Me and Wavy D will predict Bash at Berlin on Tuesday. So watch out for that. We'll record that, and that'll be posted Tuesday night. But, yeah, this division, I've been saying that they need to move every single women's tag team that's legitimately in this division to Raw, make it a spectacle, make it, hey, if you want to watch women's tag team wrestling, you got to watch Raw, and just keep it there because there's not enough tag teams across the two brands that really matter. And I don't, you know, you got what we're calling dental control. You got the Unholy Union running between all three shows, and it doesn't really make much sense what's going on with the division. And yeah, it's just a mess. We and the clear fix is just to put all the teams on Raw, give them 20, 30 minutes a night to tell some stories and move on with it. We're going to move on to Judgment Day from this past Raw. Nothing super exciting. We get some story progression, but this is the hottest thing going in the Bash at Berlin. The story's being told well. Nothing really progressed, though, on this episode of Raw, so not much to really talk about. The next big thing that I want to talk about is, and I know I'm going to miss a lot from Raw because a lot happened in the 3 hours, but I just wrote down the few things that I wanted to talk about. So Gunther versus Randy. Gunther's my dude right now, and I've been heavily trying to defend Gunther. With 100% support to this dude, I don't understand the hate to Gunther. I know his promo skill was not what a lot of the American fan base likes, and it's not the best by no means. But isn't that kind of the idea of what Gunther represents? Gunther is the ring general, right? And so I don't necessarily see it as a negative that he can't talk. I see it as he could do well enough to get to sell me on why I need to watch, why I need to tune in to see what he can do in the ring. Now, I wish he would play a little bit more into the anti-American gimmick, but I don't know necessarily how much they want him to play into that, if that's a backstage thing or if that's just Gunther's not comfortable. Because a lot of people assume that it's just because Gunther can't do it, but a lot of it may be that that's a WWE thing, and maybe they don't want him to go into that style of booking, and that they don't want his character to become that. So I don't like people automatically assuming that it's just Gunther can't do it. I tend to lean that it's just a WWE call, that Triple H or someone in the front office doesn't want that to happen, and therefore Gunther's got to work with what he's given. And I don't necessarily think it's all that bad. I think people forget what Gunther's trying to do here, which to me is just try to get Randy emotional. But I also think his goal is to try to... The goal of the story is to try to make it feel like Randy can beat him so that when he doesn't, Gunther can stand and say, I told you when I'm in the ring, I'm the best that there is. So that's what I believe they're trying to do here. I don't necessarily understand all the hate towards Gunther. Of course, Randy's 1,000 times better on the mic, but that's the whole point. Gunther's whole thing is, I don't need the microphone skills. I don't need the flashy outfits. I don't need... you know, the flashy entrances and the celebrities and all of that. I just need a simple outfit, simple music, no celebrity influence. I'm just going to get in the ring and beat jazz. And that's part of what I like about Gunther, is that he's just real simple, and he reacts based on his motivation of, I'm the best in the ring. Because at the end of the day, this still has to be. And again, I think it's a lot of the casual audience doesn't truly understand what he represents in terms of the historical sort of Southern heel from the 70s that he's portraying. And that is his character. I'm not going to sit here and say he doesn't have a character, but his gimmick is the anti-gimmick. And I think once people see Gunther through that light, I think it becomes easier to digest what he's become and what he is. And so Randy's definitely carrying the build to the feud, but that's the whole point. It's because Gunther, it continually gets beat in promo battles. The reaction of Randy's better than Gunther is exactly what they want. So when they get in the ring and Gunther hits that first chop, and then he hits the second chop, and then maybe he hits a third chop, Randy realizes, oh, shit, I'm in here with one of the best in the ring. And that's all Gunther's trying to be, right? And so that's where I'm at with Gunther. Then the last thing from Raw that I want to talk about is we've upgraded Punk versus Drew to a strap match. I like the idea. It gives us some sort of stipulation in a card that doesn't necessarily have a lot of stipulations. One thing I did forget is LA Knight offered there's an open challenge. I think this is pretty obvious. I know some in the casual wrestling community over there with Notorious Nerdy D and all of them believe this is going to be Dragunov because it's a fan service thing. I don't know if that's a big enough name to not just go ahead and announce it. This is completely 100% an answer to what Tony Khan's going to do, and we'll talk about All In here in a minute. This is 100% a response to Tony Khan trying to debut Ricochet at All In. And the answer is Ricky Starks. The answer is Ricky Starks all day. That's who's coming out and facing LA Knight. And he's not going to win. Nerdy D is right. This has to be a guy that loses the match. And Ricky Starks can come out and take a loss on his first match. Because in a pay-per-view, in a PLE, that is going to have zero talking points at the end of the show, unless we get like a big swerve and Orton beats Gunther, which I don't see happening. In a PLE that's going to have very little talking points coming out of the show, what's a bigger story than Ricky Starks showing up to face LA Knight, and though he loses, he jumps ship? And how do you answer Ricochet jumping ship than Ricky Starks jumping ship, right? Which are essentially, you know, if I were to do like a trade generator, this is about as even as a trade as you can get. And you answer the week after with you taking another one of their talents. And that's going to get the AEW fans talking about, oh, Ricky Starks is not on there. The propaganda machine against Ricky Starks, if he shows up, is going to immediately happen. There's going to be so much propaganda against Ricky Starks. Oh, he's not that good, this, that, and the other. You know, he was a punk supporter in the locker room. You know, he was, you know, the same way they ran against Jade, same thing they ran against Cody, same thing they ran against Punk. They're going to run against Ricky Starks. That's that the Tony Khan propaganda machine will be live and in action if Ricky Starks shows up. And I kind of hope this starts the show so that, you know, as we leave the night with what's normally what was planned to happen, this thing everyone's still going to talk about through the whole show is Ricky Starks. And that's what you need Ricky Starks there for. Kaiser would be fine. Dragunov would be fine. It's fan service. My problem with that is that sort of really puts a damper into, the separate brands, the brand split, the draft has zero meaning if you do that, right? That answers sort of another question, or that sort of touches on another question B-Master asked of, you know, like, what do I feel about Randy going over to Raw? I think for this individual story, it makes sense, but I don't want this to be habit. Because for this story, Randy makes sense. Because Randy can come over and say, Gunther, you won at SummerSlam, but you're only in that position because the ref clearly missed that I had my shoulder up. I want a rematch. And that works for a one-time thing. But if next month, if Gunther wins and then bad blood, we have, you know, Logan Paul come over here and say, I want a chance at Gunther, then I'll be a little upset, because that does very much. There's a lot of damage done to the concept that we have separate brands between the rosters, right? That's something WWE has traditionally done, where they've sort of damaged the idea of separate rosters, you know, a couple months into after a draft. And I really wish, if you're going to have it happen, at least announce a trade, right? I'm fine with it with this story, because there's actual, like, reason for it to happen. But it can't be habit, right? And for me, if you move Kaiser or if you move Dragunov over when there's really no reason for them to go over, especially Kaiser, because Kaiser's in no position to be asking for championships. And Dragunov really in no position to be asking for championships, because he's currently on a losing streak, right? What this does do to me, though, is 100%, you know, Ricochet's not coming back. Dragunov's winning the IC tournament that starts the week after Bash at Berlin, I believe. So Dragunov versus Braun Breaker, I do believe, will happen at Bad Blood. Because I thought of maybe a returning Ricochet would come over. Part of me would love if Ricochet doesn't come out tomorrow night, if it is Ricochet that comes out and faces LA Knight, that would be another possibility as well. Though I don't see Fightful, you know, as much as hate as I give Sean Ross Sapp, I don't see Fightful being completely this wrong and everyone buying into it. Though it would not make me that suspicious if they are wrong, because Triple H is not a big fan of Fightful. And I've always said there's a propaganda machine in WWE feeding bad information to sources like Fightful, purposely feeding bad information. And so I just don't know if they would, because I don't think these reports are coming from WWE. I think they're coming from AEW. And so I think Ricochet's gone. That's fine. What's a better way to replace Ricochet, though, than at Bash at Berlin to debut in this LA Knight Open Challenge, Ricky Starks? Perfect way to completely counteract that. And Ricochet fits better. They both would fit better in those places anyway. So that's where I'm at on that. And then I miss Bronson Reed. Bronson Reed's fine. I like what Bronson Reed's doing, but he's not doing anything different than what I mentioned last week on the pod. He's being built as this monster, and that's what they're trying to do. I wish, you know, I'm not a big fan of them feeding him to Braun Strowman, because Braun Strowman historically has been the guy that's the tall guy that you can feed to every monster you're trying to build, get an easy win, but nothing really follows up. And so I'm not big on the Bronson Reed, Braun Strowman feud. Next, you just got to put them in the Braun, add in Braun Breaker, and you got a Braun and Braun match. And maybe you can do Bronny on a pole match. I don't know. It's just, I'm not too big on what's happening with Bronson Reed in terms of feeding him to Braun Strowman, or feeding Strowman to him, because this doesn't do anything to me. In terms of, oh, he just beat the big guy. Well, this is the big guy that every big guy has ever beaten, right? So that's the first half of the show about WWE. Now let's sit here and sort of talk about All In. Now, this is a casual perspective of AEW All In, right? Casual perspective. What does that mean? What a casual perspective of All In is I'm going to make predictions, but it's going from very little knowledge of the product, and I'm going to give some insight on some things. But before we get to predicting this card, which is tomorrow night, tomorrow morning, afternoon-ish, right, because it's in London, and so I'm going to go ahead and preface this. I'm not watching the show. I'm going to another live event in my hometown, about 10 minutes from where I live. One of the local companies, they're bringing in all the big guns. I'm talking Bully Ray. Enzo's going to be there. Jeff Hardy's going to be there. Arn Anderson, Brock Anderson, Jerry Lawler. We got some big guns coming. And so stay tuned. I may have some pictures next week with that event. But I'm not watching All In, have no intention of watching All In. And so what I want to do, though, is to see if, as a casual fan, how much can I get correct? But I also want to sort of talk about the booking of this card, because All In is, correct me if I'm wrong, AEW fans watching or listening, All In is supposed to be like the WrestleMania or the SummerSlam of AEW. And we look at this card, and it's not bad. It's not bad. But, like, if WrestleMania was booked to the hardcore fans, and that's all it booked, and right? You see what I'm saying? Like this is booked for a very niche audience, and it's not going to benefit them in any way, shape, or form. I also don't like that you're in the same arena that you put 80,000 in last week. Or last year, excuse me, you put in 80,000 last year, and you're only putting 50,000 in the same arena. So you're losing 30,000 members from than who watched in person last year. Hopefully the pay-per-view buys are better, But I don't like the sort of, from a casual perspective, from a business perspective, you losing almost half of your audience from last year does not look good as someone looking from the outside looking in. But let's look at this card. So the pre-show is Chris Statlander and Stokely Hathaway versus Willow Nightingale and Tomohiro Ishii. Or Ishii, or as Dave, the only way I remember his name is how Cornette says it, Ishii. First off, I don't give two fucks about Ishii. Dude looks like a fucking bowling ball. Willow's cool. Chris Statlander's my favorite woman on the roster, maybe besides Britt Baker. Is Stokely fighting? Because that's crazy if Stokely's fighting. And so Statlander better win this match. Again, not knowing the story from the sort of casual perspective, I don't see this really drawing anybody to watch the product. And maybe that's not the goal, but from a casual fan perspective, I want to see matches. I know this is pre-show, but I want to see matches that convince people that I should watch your show. And if I'm a casual fan and an AEW fan comes up to me and says, hey, you need to watch this, and you show me this card, and you show me Tomohiro Ishii and Stokely Hathaway, like, those two people ruin this match for me. I don't know. I just, this is, I'm predicting Statlander solely because Statlander is one of my favorites. Right? Now we get to the main card. I'm going to go down the list in the order that Bleacher Report had them. And it starts with what might be the most interesting match of the whole night. And that's the AEW Now American Championship, MJF versus Will Ospreay. And guys, Ospreay should win this match. Wouldn't surprise me if MJF won it. I'm picking Will Ospreay. And this match is probably going to go 45, 50 minutes. People are going to say some people are going to say it's an instant classic. Dave Meltzer's probably going to come his pants, give it a 7-star. With the preference, with the little asterisk beside it saying 10-star in the Tokyo Dome, and that's what this match is, which is a shame because both of these wrestlers, I believe, are better than what this is going to become, right? This is going to be a spot fest from Ospreay, with the whole idea being he's going to hit the Tiger Driver to beat MJF. That's what I believe happens, right? From not watching the story at all, with the little bit of knowledge that I know that he hadn't been hitting Tiger Driver and he's been really pressed into doing it. But yeah, I'm not sold on this version of MJF, but I do think Will Ospreay wins this match and it turns it back into the AEW International Championship. We then get the Casino Gauntlet for a future AEW World Championship match. This is what I believe Ricochet comes out, but here's the problem with how they run gauntlet matches. This is sort of like a Royal Rumble style match in that people come out at random intervals. It's not a true gauntlet match because the gauntlet match is, hey, there's 10 people in the match. Person starts at one, person starts at two. One of them pins the other, and then person three comes out. And then that person, then one of them gets pinned, and then person four comes out, right? That's a gauntlet match. The way Tony Khan runs it is one and two start, and if one of the two people who start the match get a pin, the match is over. And so person three, four, five, six, seven, eight, nine, 10 may not even get an opportunity to enter the match, right? Which is stupid to me, right? And so I this is Ricochet all day. If they're going to debut him, this is where they do it. I don't think they do it super early. I think he's like person six or seven in the match. But yeah, I think Ricochet comes out, wins this gauntlet match. That's the best that I got. I could be wrong. I know I'm hearing a lot of like Hangman Page, but this is going to be the Ricochet spot, right? And it'll probably be Prince Puma, right? You get the AEW Women's Championship, Mariah May versus Toni Storm. Both of them are technically from like the UK colonies, right? I know. I think this is more of a homecoming though for Mariah May because Toni Storm's Australian, right? And so Mariah winning in front of her hometown is great. That would be perfect and wonderful. But I don't know if Mariah May is going to get it done. I think Mariah May will get it done. And then what I want to happen and what will happen, I want Jamie Hayter to come out. I want Toni Storm to win and Jamie Hayter comes out and challenges Toni Storm. That's what I want to happen. But I think Mariah May is going to get the payoff here. So we're going Mariah May there. We get a coffin match for the AEW TNT Championship between the two smallest guys on the fucking roster with Jack Perry and Darby Allin. And Perry's winning this match without a doubt. Perry's going to win this match. But Darby Allin might win Dumbest Motherfucker of the Year award with whatever he's got planned for the show. Darby Allin's going to fucking kill himself, I believe. Jack Perry's winning the match. Last chance match for the FTW champion between Chris Jericho and Hook. Hook, I don't want Hook to win. Jericho is one of my favorite things on AEW right now, solely because he pisses people off of the hardcore AEW fan base. When he comes on and I see people groaning and moaning and flipping Jericho off and turning off the TV, that makes me just pop. Because he's drawing a reaction, the exact reaction Jericho wants from the fan base he's getting. They're feeding into him. That's the reason he's on TV, is because they continue to react to it. And if they would just leave, if they would just not react to Jericho and just let it happen, Jericho's not winning and Jericho's not on TV, right? But they're feeding into Jericho and giving him a reaction. So that's why he's going to continue to get on TV. And while people may hate the learning tree gimmick, I fucking love it. I love it. And so I'm picking Jericho to win this match. TBS Championship, Mercedes Renee, Britt Baker. This may be going into it, maybe one of the two matches that I would even care about as a casual fan. The first one being Ospreay versus MJF. This is the second. I know who Mercedes Moné is as a casual fan. Now, I'm a little bit more hardcore as a casual fan, but from the casual fan perspective, like, we know who Sasha Banks or Mercedes Moné is, right? And Britt Baker should be known from a casual perspective if you know a little bit about AEW, right? And she's easy to really convince you to cheer for because she's very good at what she does. Mercedes Moné is winning this match. I don't see Britt winning, which is going to be, in my decision, or my opinion, the wrong decision. But Monet is going to win this match. That's my prediction. We get a ladder match for the Trios Championship between the Patriarchy, Christian Cage, Nick Wayne, and the Dinosaur that has two names, Luchasaurus, and or now as he's going, Kill Switch, versus the Bang Bang Gang of Juice Robinson and the Guns versus the House of Black, Malakai Black, Brody King, Buddy Matthews versus Pac, Claudio Castagnoli, and Wheeler Yuta. First off, don't give two fucks about this match. As a casual fan, I read this and I'm just reading this live right now. I completely lost interest. Now, I've mentioned in the past that I love the Bang Bang Gang. So I'm picking, they're the champions. I'm picking them to retain. Solely because they're the only team that I give a fuck out of these three or four teams. The only teams that don't care about Pac and Blackpool Combat. Don't care about them. Don't care about House of Black. Don't care about the Patriarchy. Oh, I do like the Patriarchy. I will say that. But I don't necessarily want them being Trios champions. This is going to be the Bang Bang Gang. It's going to be the Bang Bang Gang. This is going to be the Bang Bang Gang all day. Three-way tag team match for the AEW Tag Team Championships, FTR, The Acclaimed, and The Young Bucks. Again, don't give a fuck about this match. And this match is going to go on way too fucking long. This match is going to go on for like an hour, and it's going to be way too fucking long. And ultimately, I do believe that The Young Bucks retain. I do. I do believe that The Young Bucks will retain. And then we get the World Championship match, Swerve versus Bryan Danielson. Apparently, I guess, is if Danielson loses, he retires. Guys, there's two ways you could say this. If you're the bitter casual fan, you might say, well, this is obvious what Tony Khan's doing. He's throwing a title on Danielson, so Danielson resigns. I'm actually the exact opposite. Swerve's winning this match, and Danielson's leaving. And if you turn to fellow Junkyard Media Group podcast, my brother James, on his Thursday show, where him and Wavy D did the predictions of this card, he stated that he believes that Danielson's going to be in AEW when they go up to the Northwest. And that may be sort of where, like, essentially, I believe what my brother stated was something along the lines of Danielson is going to be champion and he's going to get one final run or something like that, but he's going to be with the company in October. I don't believe that. I believe this is Bryan Danielson's last match in AEW. I thoroughly believe this is Bryan Danielson's last match in AEW. His contract's over. He's going to go out on his back, put Swerve over. And I believe on September 13th, Friday night, the debut on USA in Seattle, Washington, that Bryan Danielson will debut back in, that will return to WWE, that Daniel Bryan shows back up on AEW. And I believe that can be a contender for Cody to fight against, right? I believe they could set up a position where this would be post Bad Blood, I believe. I believe it's post Bad Blood, because Bad Blood's like, what? Oh no, Bad Blood's October. Excuse me. So this will be the lead in to Bad Blood. So I believe Daniel Bryan or Bryan Danielson and Cody Rhodes could be the feud for Bad Blood. Thoroughly believe that. Thoroughly believe that. We get about a month build towards Bad Blood. Thoroughly believe we can get Bryan Danielson, Cody Rhodes at Bad Blood. And so Swerve is winning this match. Without a doubt, Swerve is winning this match. Yeah, I don't know, man. I just, the card's not bad, right? If I was more invested in the story, I might like the card's not bad. I, as a little bit more knowledgeable casual fan, know 95% of the people fighting in this card. But that's not what I look at when I look at from, when I say casual perspective, I look at this and I say, this does nothing for me in progressing the domestic product, right? This does nothing for me in trying to sell tickets for All In 2025 in Dallas, right? How are you going to, in a year's time, convince me with this card that you're going to do something better than this with the talent you have, right? And I just, you're booking this for a very niche audience, and I don't know if that audience is going to continually be there to support you, right? Your hardcore fan base is, one, the reason I don't watch AEW, but two, like, that's who this is booked for. And so let's go over it. Chris Statlander, Will Ospreay, Mariah May, Jack Perry, Chris Jericho, Mercedes Moné, the Bang Bang Gang, Young Bucks, Swerve Strickland. That's my prediction. That's my prediction. And I got this morning. Who knows if Tony's adding more matches tonight on Collision? And so if anything else comes out, I'm not going to have that prediction. But if Wavy D's probably going to turn back and watch. I know he's not watching live because he's at work. Go get that money. And so what we're going to do is, he did his predictions on Tuesday on the Beyond the Junkyard podcast. So I wanted to do this just to get my predictions out there. We're going to sort of, this is going to be something we talk about on Tuesday, who did the best predictions. And when I do my run through, I'll let him know, like, hey, hope you remembered your predictions. But when he watches this, he'll hear this as well. We'll see who did the best, in terms of predictions of All In. But with that, that's all I got for y'all. I hope y'all enjoyed the show, this special episode. like, share, subscribe. If you're listening on audio after the fact, give us a thumbs up, give us a review, do what the, whatever the platform asks you to, leave us your feedback, follow, subscribe, send to all your friends, share this around. Thank you all who watched live on this episode. I do appreciate it. And until Tuesday, I will see y'all again on the next episode of the Slapping Me Wrestling Podcast. We will have DJ Wavy D back on Tuesday, unless some circumstances are not something we're planning for happens. Wavy D will be back. The awaited debut or return of DJ Wavy D back to the program next Tuesday. Y'all, we predict Bash at Berlin. Cannot wait to see y'all again on Tuesday. Y'all have a great rest of your weekend, and we'll see you then. Brother, I'm going on a wild Hulk Hogan. If I like get some moment, I'll make sure it's an explosion. Cause lately I've been seeing stars, trying to kick her on his choke hold. But it's no holds barred, middle finger like a stone cold. If you're paying more than $1 a month for any ED or hair medication, listen up. At Joy & Blokes, when you start TRT or enclomiphene, you can add any ED or hair loss prescription for just $1 a month. $1 add-ons with your hormone plan, and right now, all labs are 50% off. I'm Josh Whalen, founder of Joy & Blokes. I built this company because men are tired of paying for fragmented care without results. Every Joy & Blokes lab includes a visit with a licensed clinician who connects your symptoms to your biomarkers. You'll get a real plan that covers hormones, performance, and confidence. If you're considering TRT or enclomiphene, this is the most efficient way to do it. Get started at joyandblokes.com and use the promo code PODCAST. New customers get 50% off their labs, and for a limited time, you can take advantage of our $1 ED or hair loss add-ons when you start TRT or enclomiphene. Not available in all states. Compounded medications are not FDA approved. Learn more at joyandblokes.com.